Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. First of all, wow, what a great crowd. Excited to see all of you. You know, it's my distinct honor to introduce our guests today. And first of all, I appreciate all of you all being here and giving them a good Christian County welcome. It's great to see you all. I tell you, and I know why you're here, because you're here to support a guy that is not afraid to be relentless about the attacks, or it's not scared to go against Dr. Fauci. Can you imagine? Can you imagine where we would be if it wasn't for Senator Paul and his questions? We would still all be wearing masks. So I appreciate his relentless efforts in Washington. I appreciate his relentless efforts here in the Commonwealth, and I appreciate his efforts here in Christian County. He's a frequent flyer here to Christian County, and I appreciate you each and every time that you come out. He's been a very big advocate for agriculture, and I look forward to working with you for 4 years as your next county judge. And I've got to plug that in. But I want to introduce someone that has absolutely nailed it at Fancy Farm. And if you all did not get to watch the Fancy Farm speeches, I encourage you to go and YouTube Fancy Farm 2022, because Senator Paul's better half, Kelly, did an outstanding job, spoke from the heart, and actually did a wonderful job representing the values that we and each and every one of us in this room share. So please give a big warm welcome to Kelly Paul.
And you all have been so kind and warm and welcoming. We just need that last big push right before the election. We need to turn the ship around. I know you all agree with that. And I know that you'll agree with me when I say I am incredibly proud of my husband of 32 years, Rand Paul. Woo! We celebrated our 32nd wedding anniversary actually last week. Our son, our first son to get engaged, proposed to his girlfriend the next night. So there's some fun personal news for us. But, you know, I never thought when I married him, I thought I was marrying a nice curly-headed doctor, just a mild-mannered guy. We're going to live in Bowling Green. And, you know, God had other plans. We started on this journey. But Rand never forgets who he's accountable to, and he believes in holding government accountable to you, the people, and he's never wavered in that. He is incredibly brave. He's incredibly bold. He's not afraid to ask the tough questions. He will not be silenced. I think he has represented us so well, and I'm so proud of him every single day. We got off the plane a few weeks ago, and it was Southwest Airlines, and the pilot followed us off the plane and wanted to take a picture with Rand and said, you know, I just love you, Rand. He said, I'm not a constituent, don't live in Kentucky, but I want you to know that my friends and I, every time you're on TV, we look at each other and we say, that's America's senator right there. He really stands for people. So thank you for your support, for being behind us. We've got one more week to go, and I know you'll be there for us, so please give a big hand to my dear, sweet husband, Rand Paul.
Thank you, Kelly, and thank you guys for all coming out today. We've been making a big trip all around the state today. This is our fifth stop, and then we're headed to Bowling Green from here. And then on Monday, right before the election, we'll have a day where we do 7 stops in one day. But this is to get everybody energized, excited for the election. It is a chance to turn the ship of state. We've been going in the wrong direction ever since we got Biden in the White House, and it is time. It is time. Come Monday, come Tuesday, there's a red wave coming. We are, for the first time in the history of Kentucky, a majority Republican state. And those who are not yet Republicans and still elected are rushing quickly to switch. I think there's only one Democrat in the state legislature left west of I-65. And they're in Bowling Green, and we are working hard to make sure they get back to Bowling Green. I think what motivates so many people and why people are so upset is that a lot of times policy isn't right in your face. You know, government can do things, people aren't happy about it. But what this government's been doing to the price of groceries, to the price of gasoline, you can't escape it. They can even pass out $1,400 checks, but guess what? In the last 6 months, you spent more than $1,400 more on gasoline than you did in the previous administration. In the Trump administration, when there was a Republican White House, the average family income rose by $5,000. Since Biden took office 2 years ago, we've lost about 4,000 of the 5,000. It's going down. They said they wanted higher wages. Well, $15 an hour, if it only buys $10 worth an hour of worth of food and groceries, isn't really worth it. So our income really has not expanded. And to make matters worse, we got in the middle of this COVID thing, and everything they told us was based on our submission, but not our safety. Putting stickers on the floor, the only person that benefited from the stickers was the guy making money putting the stickers out. Finally, one guy from the FDA, the head of the FDA, admitted, well, 6 feet really, probably 30 feet wouldn't be enough. If we're in this room for an hour and somebody's got COVID, you probably catch it if you're all the way across the room. But here's the thing, why aren't we worried as much today? Because immunity. You've either had it or you've had the vaccine or both. But the thing is Fauci has not been honest with us. One, he didn't tell you there was any treatment. If you got sick, that there was a treatment, but that you needed to get it soon before you got too sick, well, then the treatment wouldn't be available. He also didn't tell you what to do or what does it mean if you've already had the disease. So 2 weeks ago, CDC now recommends that the COVID vaccine be mandatory for your children. And yet most of our kids have already had COVID. What is the chance that one of these children will get COVID, go to the hospital and die? It was virtually zero. It was about 1 in 2 million in 2020. But now it's spread throughout the community that most people have had it. I think the number is zero. So when I ask Fauci, what is the odds? What are the odds if the children decide not to be vaccinated that they could be somehow harmed by this disease? And he won't tell you. He says, oh, we don't have the information, because it's zero. If you are concerned for your child's well-being from COVID, and you want to wear a mask all the time, and you want to live in a cave somewhere, you should also put a tinfoil hat on your child with a lightning rod, because your child's more likely to be struck by lightning than they are to die from COVID. Nobody with a lick of sense thought this through at all. And it turned out that this disease, the facts of it, were available within 2 months. Within 2 months, we knew something was very dramatic about this disease, that older, overweight, and also people with other diseases could get very sick and die, and that younger people almost never had any symptoms at all. With little kids, you almost can't even tell if they've had it. Sniffles maybe at most. So I'm not saying it's not deadly, I'm just saying it's different. It's sort of like this. If one of these children come into the emergency room, and I used to work in the emergency room, and one of them had chest pain, and then I came in and had chest pain, you think there might be a difference in how we approach it. An 8-year-old's unlikely to be having a heart attack. A 59-year-old, the first thing you're going to think is a heart attack with chest pain. You don't treat them the same, but it's the same way with this virus. The COVID was less dangerous than the seasonal flu for children. And for us, my age and older, it's much more dangerous than the seasonal flu. But the thing is no talk of treatment. No talk of treatment. I never heard it once. Monoclonal antibodies were out there, but you know what? They would only give you the monoclonal antibodies as an outpatient. So I had people frantically calling me saying, my loved one is sick. They've been put in the hospital. They may have to go on the ventilator tomorrow. What about those monoclonal antibodies? And I talked to the doctor and say, oh, well, too late. We can't do it. And why can't he do it? Because Dr. Fauci set an algorithm that says you can only get them as an outpatient, not as an inpatient. So this is a kind of ludicrous thing that came from having one person in charge.
That's right.
So about 2 months ago, I introduced an amendment that said we should eliminate Dr. Fauci's position.
Yeah.
Divide it in three, so three people would do his job, and have them all approved by the Senate. Because the thing is, he has too much power. Too much power is concentrated in his hands. If he were simply a family doctor from Peoria, the only people who would be harmed would be the people foolish enough to choose him as their doctor. Mm-hmm. But since he's in charge of everything, it all flows down. He says, oh, I didn't do that. Well, certainly he did that. When he's on national television as the top presidential advisor, the head of all the money, and he says that school kids should stay out of school, kids stayed out of school. They all listened to him. When they put the COVID vaccine on the mandatory list for vaccines, the states, at least half the states, are going to try to follow it. But I've met your state legislators, and you know what? I will be talking to them, but they are all opposed to mandatory vaccines and so on. But the left-wing media can't get any of this at all, that there might be some nuance. Some people here probably have been vaccinated. I'm okay with that. In fact, Kelly's parents are 91 and 86. They got vaccinated. I'm not against the vaccine. Some may be, and that's fine. But it should be your choice. But the thing is, it's different for an 80-year-old than it is for an 8-year-old. And if you're not willing to say that, you're not paying any. They say, watch the science. Pay attention to the science. It's the science. Well, then really, when you get down to it, though, and you hear the way Fauci pushes back, he says, well, I am the science. And any criticism of me, you're criticizing science. How dare you criticize me? When I asked him a simple question in committee, I asked him this question. I said, are any doctors or scientists that are on the vaccine approving committee, do any of them get paid by the people making the vaccines? And he told me, frankly, it was none of my business. But if it's none of my business, he's telling you that it's none of your business. Because it's my job to ask questions for you. Through freedom of information, which means a judge had to force it, he has never given any information without being forced to by a judge. This guy works for us. He and his wife together make $860,000 a year. Their portfolio, I don't know if anybody else's portfolio is doing this well, went from $7 million to $12 million during the pandemic. And yet when I ask him, are any of these doctors receiving royalties, he says, it's none of my business. But through Freedom of Information Act, a judge forced them to reveal something. And we found out this, 1,800 scientists made $193 million. But they won't tell us which scientists or which companies gave to which scientists. Think about it this way. If you had a school board election and someone won for school board in Christian County, but they also owned a textbook company and they voted to buy the textbooks from their own company, you think that would be a problem? We wouldn't tolerate it for a second. We'd ride them out of town on a rail, they'd be impeached, and they would never hold office. And yet that's what he's telling us, that we have no right to know. He actually held up a law from 1980, which we disagree with. We don't think that's what the law says. And he says, because of this law, we do not have to tell you who's paying our doctors and how much. They're ultimately going to lose this battle, because I promise you this, when we win next Tuesday, when I'm a chairman of a committee, I'm going to subpoena every last paper. What happened to our kids when they took them out of school and said there is no school? Some people are very capable of teaching their kids. Some people can't. The kids who didn't have parents capable of doing it, the scores plummeted. So math, reading, all downhill because of this. Socialization. Even the beginning of speech, when little kids begin being able to speak, they decided to change what is normal because it's too much slower than it used to be because of the masks. Did the masks work? No. The cotton masks don't work at all. What did everybody wear because they were comfortable? The cotton masks. I used to say, cutting up your t-shirt and putting it over your face is not a real good treatment. The pores in cotton are 600 times bigger than the virus. So the virus sails in and out through that cotton all the time. Even the appropriately worn mask that might help you if you wear it absolutely perfect and throw it away and you wear it like a doctor or nurse does, the N95 mask, guess what? Those, after they're worn for 4 hours, get enough moisture for your breath that it gets rid of the electrostatic charge and they don't work. But the bottom line is the reason they don't work is this, and here's what I would tell you, if you ask me my advice on it. If your loved one, if you're 75 years old, and your loved one has COVID, and you're going to take care of them, which is what most spouses would do, you bring them food, you want in the same room with them, I'd wear an N95 mask, I would. But you wear it very tight for as long as you can, then you leave the room, you don't spend a lot of time in the room, then you take the mask off, because nobody can live in the damn mask. And that's what the doctors do. They take the mask off, and doctors and nurses, as soon as they move, so they can have some protection. But the general public, they did studies of this. In Denmark, they did a study of 6,000 people with masks, 6,000 people without, and there was no difference in the incidence of the disease. If you went to Florida anytime the last 2 or 3 years, nobody seems to be wearing a mask. In California, they'll put you in jail for not wearing a mask. They arrested a guy paddleboarding by himself. They sent the Coast Guard, a Coast Guard cutter, to arrest one person on a paddleboard. One guy was jogging on the beach. They sent the state police after him. The state police were in big boots and, you know, big uniform and everything. The guy's like jogging and watching the guy. He gradually gets a little passionate about it. Never catches him. But seriously, we're chasing people down who are running by themselves. Yeah. If you want to know the difference between a Republican and a Democrat, go hike the Appalachian Trail. And if someone's hiking by themselves up there with a mask on, they might just do that. None of this saved anything. But you know what finally saved us? And you know why we're more comfortable? Immunity. You either got vaccinated or you got the disease or both. Meanwhile, the head of the CDC, Rachel Walensky, oh, she's got COVID again. She's been vaccinated 5 times and she's got it twice now in the last month. She probably has rebound, I don't know. But she probably took some medication, now she has rebound. But it's like, my question would be, when she got it, did she know she had it? Are you really sick if you don't know you're sick? I mean, because they wanted to do all this random testing, all the testing of the children, every day. And then if you refuse to be vaccinated, you'd have to be tested every day and be excluded and put in another part of the book. None of this made any sense. None of it saved any money. Immunity works. You either take a vaccine if you want to take a vaccine or you get the disease. And if you survive, you're going to be immune. And most people who aren't at risk, it's not a big deal. But really the loss here was not so much just the mandates. It was the loss of fundamental liberty. The governor, I call him DWP, drunk with power. He sent the government agents to a church on Easter Sunday morning to take down the license plates of people going to church. Never, ever again should we let government take our liberty. The inflation, the money, everything that ensued was all from a crazy notion of what we should do about this. Why do I still pursue this? Why am I not letting go of this? Because I think this virus came from a lab in China and it could happen again. We must get to the root of this, and that's one reason we're going to go after Fauci and all of these people and all of their records is, if this happened in a lab, we need to say never ever again should we fund research in Wuhan or other countries. When we win on Tuesday, and I think we're going to win not only in Kentucky, we're going to win nationwide. We need to remember why we're here.
That's right.
What do we represent? What are we trying to win? Is it shirts and skins, red versus blue? We just want to win for winning's sake? No, we want to win because we're the party that believes that the worst possible scenario is when we concentrate power in a few hands, in the hands of a few people.
Yes.
We believe in the dissipation of power. We believe in the separation of power and the checks and balances. We believe in the 10th Amendment, that Congress and the federal government should only do those things that the Constitution granted them power to do.
Yes.
Power is not granted to the federal government, we're left to the states and to the people respectively. We need to have a great appreciation for county government and for state government. Why? Because you know what? They spend what comes in. The state government had money to help people who suffered in their tornado. We had it in Bowling Green, Mayfield got it bad, and other places had it. You may have had some in the county as well. But the thing is, the state government collects your taxes. They spend it as wisely as they can, and they had money left over, and they call it a rainy day fund. The Republican majority put $2 billion in the rainy day fund. That's responsible government. $200 million of that has been dispersed to Western Kentucky, and $200 million was recently sent to Eastern Kentucky. Do you know what the federal government has in their rainy day fund? Minus $31
trillion.
I've never had a meeting in Washington where anybody even showed up and said, wow, we only bring in $4 trillion, so we're going to have to prioritize our spending. So when you have a new judge here, your judge is going to look at the money that comes in, the magistrates will meet, and they will say, this is how much we have, and they'll prioritize their projects, and not everything gets done that year. Whatever, you have enough money, and the magistrates say, this is what we want to do, we'll get done. That never happens in Washington. They just spend, spend, spend. It doesn't matter, it could be a great project or a loser project, but everything gets spent. It just added on. And so I usually say, well, if you're going to do this, and this is a good thing to spend money on, why don't we cut some money over here to pay for this so we don't add to the debt? That almost never wins. I tried to get an inspector general just to watch the money they're spending in Ukraine, and they voted me down. But I've been all over the state, and I haven't had anybody come up to me and say, wow, we just need to spend the money overseas instead of spending it here. No, I think we need to take care of the problems we got here at home.
Yeah.
When we win on Tuesday, our goal is not to lord it over the Democrats or lord it over the people we defeat in the election. Our goal is not to be supreme rulers of other people. We're the party that believes you should be left alone.
Absolutely.
Left alone in your religion, your personal lives. We're the leave me the heck alone party.
Amen.
This is what we can't quite get through and the media won't get. They think somehow, oh, you're the insurrectionist. You're the people who want to take away liberty. You're the people who want to be authoritarians. We're the opposite. We're the laissez-faire party, hands off. We want hands off of your business. We don't want anything to do with your religion or your church. That is your business. The other side is doing all of those things. Everything they accuse us of doing, they're doing in spades. Ultimately, we are going to win this time, but it's important when we win, when we have that victory on Tuesday, that we show the people what we represent, that we show that our desire is not to rule over the other side, but to create and allow freedom for everybody from all walks of life. When we do that, we're truly going to be the bigger victors. Thank you very much.